Good afternoon. Welcome back to the Memory Core. It's been a while. Things have been kind of crazy, but we are enjoying a warm day. We have fresh made margaritas from scratch, which I always thought was kind of a girly drink until I learned how to make it from scratch, and it's actually hits the spot.
It's not that bullshit from Chili's.
Yeah. But we're outside, so you might hear a lot of background noise, cars driving by, air conditioners turning on. But hey, you know, who knows when we're going to have another nice day to do this. I mean, considering last week we got hit with a awful, unique storm that knocked the power out of our area for 5 days. And we're not even in Iowa where they have even worse. But yeah, so Dan and I are here. Dan, what have you been up to? Any good projects around the house?
Repairing everything after the storm blew through.
Yeah. I mean, anything like you've been working on though?
Honestly, not really. I mean, like I said, just repairs around the house. I had to put my fence back together, two sections.
Yeah.
I mean, you snuck by when I was pretending I was the Doom guy with my chainsaw cutting the branches.
Yeah, making sure Dan didn't fall from his roof.
The other thing is that wood project I came up for our paper standees.
Yeah.
So I came up with a different format for vehicles based off of like the hex bases you make.
You don't
make an entire hex. You make like a rectangle.
Like a rectangle, yeah. That's all that matters for vehicles, right?
So, yeah. So I did something with that. I wanted to make a video on that, but I just, between not having any power and just my motivation has been gone.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad the first couple of days because it was relatively nice out. But by about Thursday, with still no power and no breeze, it's just the heat never left the houses, and no matter what floor you slept on, it was just miserable.
We went almost a week.
Yeah.
What, two days away?
I was, week? Yeah. It was Monday that we lost it, and then I didn't get it back until Friday.
Yeah.
And it sucked. I've been making this Moxon vise. So the Moxon vise is this wide vise for woodworking. And it's basically designed so that between the two threaded rods, you can get a case side in there so you can do like dovetails, work on the ends of boards, and you don't have to worry about the board flexing on you or anything like that. It's pretty nice. Somebody's honking at us and trying to get our attention. I don't know why. I don't know who the hell these people are. But yeah, I've been making it from branch wood, which has been really frustrating, but it's the only thing I've had that's in like thick enough. So that tree that fell in my backyard, it's just been really difficult and exhausting. It's been taking longer than it should because it's not nice straight grain material. But the Moxon vise, it was first described by a guy in like Britain in like the 1800s who wrote a book on woodworking. His last name was Moxon, so he kind of was given that. It was given that name, but it was originally called lying press, and not to like squeeze lies out of people, but it was used for bookmakers to stitch the lies or the folds of paper. And that's why they call it a lying press, for like the book backing. And maybe when it's done, I can put together all the BattleTech books that have fallen apart because I've read them so much. Because the adhesive and the backing glue and all that stuff was not really that durable. So my old 3025 TRO has absolutely fallen apart because when I got it as a kid in 1994, all I did was read that book. Because TRO 3025 is where it's at. Which brings us to our topic today.
3025. A retrospective.
Yeah. Is that the roundabout way I got there?
Yeah. It worked pretty good.
So, and again, I know we've been putting it off, like, why General Kerensky sucks. And we'll get there. We'll get there one day. But with a lot of the new art coming out for these designs for the Kickstarter, I think one of the things that kind of strikes me is, you know, why we're so attached to this era of BattleTech and why this artwork just really sticks with us. And I think one of the big things is this TRO, and not just the art style, which we'll also talk about.
Yeah.
But its layout,
the importance behind the actual book, too.
The fluff, everything about it just really works. And along with that comes TRL 3026. And 3026, because its vehicles, doesn't get quite the love that 3025 does, because 3025 is, what, 80% battle max.
Mm-hmm.
But those two kind of fit neatly together in this era. And then after that, see, everything else after that just doesn't quite have the...
No.
Doesn't suck you in. And they've been... Every time they've gone back and done something, they try and go back to that sort of secret sauce, yeah, that je ne sais quoi of 3025.
A good example, if you, you know, new fans, if you get your hands on the original technical readout, 3025, read that and then skip over to 3050 and you'll see what we mean.
And not the 3050 upgrade. No, came out a few years ago.
The FASA made 3050.
Yeah.
Well, not upgrade. Yeah. I know what you're saying. Because then they did the
revised.
The
reprint. Yeah.
Just check that out and you'll know exactly what we're talking about.
So what 3025 was, I think, was one of the first big books that came out that really discussed the background and setting of the universe. And what you get are, 55 max 12 aerospace fighters?
Yeah, you get
15
your,
or something like that, and 12
you have
vehicles.
Your 3 land air max. And what's interesting are the rest of the vehicles in the back, because they're not actually combat vehicles.
Yeah, a lot of them aren't, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the dropships, and you get the repair installation. So the last entry in this book is just, an essay on repair installations and what it's like to work at one, how they're laid out, how they're equipped.
The importance behind them.
Yeah. So, 325, one of the, I think I mentioned this before, back on, was it episode 2? Two of the original guys that worked on it were L.R. Butch Leeper and Forrest Brown, along with, a bunch of other guys that did writing. But, Forrest and Butch were, I know at least Forrest was in the military. He was in Vietnam. And so there is that sort of military mindset. And that's why some of these mechs are designed the way they are, because, who knows what you're going to run into. But it's not just, they're not all designed perfectly, but a lot of them may have quirks or details that stand out. Like you were mentioning this too, Dan, right? Like the Hermes too, and them having like these little, they're trying to work for roles versus just being...
They
fit in the universe, but they don't just necessarily fit in the tabletop.
Yeah, maybe did put it this way, but what they do is these designs aren't made for they're made for the game itself, but it's not the meta of, how many medium lasers can I pack on a design? And, you have your handful that are like that.
Yeah.
But it's from the perspective of the people that design these mechs, so you kind of get this. You have different factories. You have certain styles at these factories. A good example would be Osman Industries, because they came up with the whole battle pod concept, but they did a limited run of their mechs. They actually sold it to other companies to produce them.
Yeah.
It's a lot of the stuff that's kind of missed in the later technical readouts.
Yeah. And we'll definitely get into that, because you can kind of see when the changes happen. I suppose there's different reasons for it, but with the original TRL 325 and 26, what you get are, you get an overview,
mm-hmm.
you get a description, rough description of its capabilities, and sometimes I talk about like the faults of it. So I just grabbed 325, I just flipped it over to the catapult, and the catapult has issues with its jump jets.
Yes.
And they talk about that, and they talk about, some of them being fixed, some of them not being fixed.
Side ejection system.
Right, yeah. Unique. I think the Wasp Lam is a weird ejection system, too.
Yeah.
And what's great about it is that what works about Battletech is that sometimes a lore can't really fit in a standard tabletop game of Battletech, 1v1. But I think they really stand out in terms of a RPG setting or, sort of a sandbox setting. But yeah, you have overview, you have the capabilities, and you have battle history. And, granted, some of them have shorter histories written. Some of them have longer histories written. Some of them is just like, yeah, this is the one thing that this mech did, and it sucked at it. So it's a bit all over the place.
I was going to say, not all of them are good.
but then you have variants, and you have notable mechs and mech warriors, which is really cool. So you get more of this lore that gets filled in. And there are errors throughout it. Like, I think the Zeus in the original 25 TRO, like, the date they give, it debuted before the Mackie did, which is the first battle mech. Between, I think, the Stinger and the Blackjack entries, there are errors of Mercer Ravinian, who was this Draconis Combine military officer who came up with the Horde principle. But, you know, throughout it, you get drips and drabs, and then whole swaths of history of the Inner Sphere. I mean, you get... You could tell Kitaris was on their mind for a long time when it came to...
Yeah, there's a lot of entries for that.
But you also get, you know, Katrina Steiner and her Defense of Hesperus and all sorts of really cool stuff that gets, you know, debuted and written about and hinted at. And it's just...
Yeah. Natasha Kerensky's mentioned in it.
Yeah.
So is... who's the rifleman pilot in her unit?
I think Johnny Clavel.
Yep. He's mentioned in it as one of the uniques for the rifleman.
You get really cool characters, too. There's a lot of Wolf Strike Goons entries. There's some Team Banzai stuff. There are allusions and references to other pop culture things. And it just... I remember being in fourth grade. I watched the BattleTech animated show. I then got the BattleTech 3rd Edition box set as, a birthday present. And then my dad, we were at Leisure Hours Hobbies, which is a local hobby store in town. And he bought me a copy of 3025, probably to his ever standing regret, because I did not really pay much attention to school after that. But yeah, I mean, all I wanted to do was just read that book. I get home from school and I just flip through it constantly, because it laid out a world that you wanted to explore.
Yeah, my exposure to the TRO wasn't actually the book itself, but back then. Which is another thing I want to do for our podcast. I used to use a program called Battle Mech Designer.
Mm-hmm.
And when you downloaded the designs for that program, the fluff was in there.
Probably so, illegally.
Well, it is illegal. But, you know, it's like with Mega Mech and stuff, but I don't want to get too off topic with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the entries and everything in there were... basically the, you know, just cut from the TRO itself.
Mm.
And I actually got a physical copy of this book, I want to say like a year ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like I never actually owned a physical copy of 3025 until I got lucky and found one.
Oh, damn. Yeah. I think I have three of them. One of them is the original one. It's in terrible shape. It's like got masking tape as the spine, keeping it together. And then I got another one from somebody else. It's not in the best of shape, but it looks better. And then I found like a pretty much a mint one off of eBay or something. And I was like, yeah, you know, I think I do want a mint condition one of that.
I knew I missed out on something.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have it. I mean, I kind of did, but it's different. Because when you have the physical copy, you know, even the way... Because they don't only describe the like battle mix of the universe... You know, even before you get into each weight class, they lay out, like, okay, your lights are specifically recon or, you know, like your bread and butter, like the mediums.
Yeah.
You know, because it is in this book that says, like, mediums are the main battle mechs of the successor states.
Yeah.
You know?
Heavies tend to be, you know, lance leaders and company captains.
Yeah, and which then, you know, which makes sense when you're putting together a unit like Wolf's Dragoons, and they're gonna have heavier units. Mm-hmm. But hey, you know, like if you and I, we went through the training to become a mech warrior, you know, if I was in Davian space, I'd be piloting an enforcer. It's more than likely.
That's what they would slap you in. Yeah, you'd be in a medium mech. One of the things I noticed too, so you bounce around a little bit, but. You know, I like the artwork, and we'll probably get into that a little bit later, but, you know, a lot of, what, like, 14 so designs, 15, I have to really go back and count, You know, a good chunk of those designs were the original, like Robotech and Macross and Crusher Joe designs, and they were tweaked a little bit. You know, the Marauder, for example, has maybe some boxier design elements and angular design elements versus some of the curves that came over from Robotech. But a lot of those designs, particularly the Dug Ram, so the Thunderbolt, the Battlemaster,
Shadowhawk.
well, not the Shadowhawk, but the machine gun thing.
Oh,
So
yeah.
the
Okay.
Goliath, and then from the Crusher Joe, the Locust, and the Robotech, the Stinger and the Phoenix Hawk and the Warhammer, those are primarily the Mexicarian machine guns. I think that's kind of interesting because I think when you go out of it, it's the Vulcan and the Firestarter, which are FASA originals that are the only ones that have machine guns, and the rest of them don't. I mean, there are variants, the Catapult, the Victor.
Yeah, but you don't have official stats of those at this point.
So you look at those. I just find it interesting, particularly like Dug Ram. So those of you who aren't familiar with it, Fang of the Sun, Dug Ram, was a science fiction military anime, which is where the Shadowhawk, the Thunderbolt, Scorpion, Goliath, Battlemaster, and I think a couple other things come from.
Locust, I
Locust is
believe.
Crusher Joe.
Okay, I got it mixed up then.
You know, that one was far more sort of military science based. And granted, I mean, it's still in the Dug Ram, which became the Shadowhawk, is still like the Uber mech, and there's reasons for why it is. And but it was far more like tactics and supply lines and infantry and vehicles and guerrilla tactics. But those are the mechs that tend to feature machine guns. And I found it interesting. They were sort of those original, you know, 14 mechs or so were, you know, really mainstays in the universe until 3025 came out, and then just a hair before it, MechWarrior First Edition. But I think it was the implications that there's a lot more vehicles and infantry out there than we tend to play with. And so a lot more machine gun use is probably important, especially when you're fighting hordes of infantry.
Which kind of foreshadows into 3026.
But yeah, 3025 just is so strong through and through because of the lore, because of the universe it establishes, that a lot of TROs only recently sort of tried to recapture, and a lot of them because they were revisions.
Yeah, I thought a pretty good example, which is because it, you know, obviously both of us read through it again, you know, do something like this. But let me get to it. The Whitworth was probably my favorite section of this because of the two pilots, Garvo Kent and Marco Hallman. They basically trained together for they were in a Draconis Combine. I'm not gonna say like specific unit or anything. But what happened was they had a falling out where they had to draw the line on, you know, do I murder people or not? And that's what basically split up their friendship. So now they're in different units, and every time they encounter each other on the battlefield, it's like the Red Sea is parted and they just go after each other and just slug it out. Like, I thought that was the coolest thing that when I got to that section. And you know, it's something you just don't see anymore.
So when
It's a like it's just there's so much personality
yeah, I mean
in
everything,
that.
well, like the Ausk Scout having the sensors sort of in the arms, and it
Oh
sort of spends
yeah.
its time waving its arms
I mean,
around.
the new one now, it's like they completely forgot about that because they put Battle Fists on it. It's like it's not supposed to have that. The tubes were there so it could survey land and actually do what it's good at, recon.
The only thing it was really dedicated for was recon. And then, I mean, you get loads of stuff, and even like the Atlas, the fiction on the Atlas, I think is brilliant because it, one, I mean, it describes characters. It describes one character. I think was it Grieg Samsonov?
Was it Samson? I was thinking of Kerensky. He's the one who designed it. I thought we were
Yeah, well,
going to
no,
get into that.
Kerensky designed it,
Yeah.
but so there's Vasily Sharenkov, who I think plays a role in the Wolves on the Border story. It's like, oh, he's so fat that the only mech that can hold him up is the Atlas, right? Or this guy, mech warrior Rodney Van Cleven. And I think it's really cool, you know, this idea that, you know, here's a guy who is just a mech warrior, but he's in an Atlas. And he spends his time stomping around the battlefield as a 100-ton scout mech and, like, one of the slowest mechs at the time. And then all he does is overheat. So he wins a land title, and he's so fucking great. And then he screws it up on the next battle by overheating and losing everything because he goofed and the whole unit lost a fight because he wasn't there. Just stuff like that, I think, is yeah. Just great. Just great.
Even the pilot for the assassin, I think it's Dale Sandstorm, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
He was the inspiration for the Dark Death variant that was put in MechWarrior Online a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. What's her name? In the Awesome.
Yeah, but the way he got his mech, he was he had a stinger, and he was dispossessed, and he was actually in an infantry unit, and he actually stumbled upon the remains of an assassin. And what he did was, he spent all of his life savings and got it back in working condition, and he became an infamous bounty hunter.
Oh yeah,
in the
yeah.
Intersphere.
Which I think in the TRO 3039, the bounty hunter. The bounty hunter who piloted the Marauder.
Yeah, he wasn't that bounty hunter.
Yeah, he he ended up killing that dude.
Did he?
Yeah. He's like, you're acting all tough, like you're taking up my turf,
stealing my thunder.
But yeah, like, a lot of the mechs in MechWarrior Online, the custom variants, the hero variants, were taken from TRO 325. For example, Danielle Peterson in the Awesome, the Pretty Baby. You know, they ended up using that to. Make the Awesome hero variant. And you look at, I mean, you just flip through it and every page is just absolutely full of text. And that continues on at 3026. And then something happened. And I mean, one, of course, you know, Luce did all this artwork as well. And what I like about the mechs on the page is they occupy a space. And it's futuristic, it's science fiction. I mean, you have, you know, rock formations in the background, or you've got trees in the background. And they're a bit hazy, they're not distinct, but they're there. The Marauder has that sort of, that 80s grid pattern.
Yeah, 80s
grid. And in the background, you kind of see a city, what I would assume is a city with some skyscrapers. And, you know, the urban mech is in a cityscape, the Jaeger mech's in a, you know, a rocky Badlands area. What I like is actually the Dervish, because they sort of flipped, it's a night scene, right? And they sort of flip the imagery. So it's a white ground and then a black sky with a moon. Yeah. And
the scene with the spider is actually pretty cool too.
Yeah, actually.
You have the guy running away.
Yeah.
Or Hatchet Man is another good one.
He's hooked up to like the coolant truck.
Yeah.
It's one of those things too. It's kind of been lost, or it was lost with some of the artwork, is what the scale actually is of these designs. And I like a lot of Plog's illustrations, but his scale is kind of all over the place, and you see it in some of the other artwork as well, in some of the scenario books.
Which isn't to say Luce doesn't have his moments too.
Oh yeah, no. The spider. There's no way a man can fit in that spider's cockpit.
You know? Absolutely.
But some of the stuff, it gets a little bit ridiculous in terms of scale. The mechs are a little bit too big. But, you know, for the most part, a lot of the stuff I really enjoy. I mean, the Vindicator. You know, the idea that the Vindicator has ports around the PPC, it can just stick its arm in standing water and quickly shunt heat by running water around the PPC jacket to cool it down.
And I vaguely remember when I was reading through the fluff, but I'm pretty sure that played a role in some defense that Liao had against the Davians at, was the beginning in the Fourth Succession War, I believe. Like, that actually came into play.
Which is good.
It's
worth using that stuff to your advantage. I think was it Stardate was the magazine that they had quirks from Max?
Yeah, no, it was Dragon.
It was Dragon, yeah, and that goes back. I mean, that goes back to what,
that's
87,
which also speaks to the legacy of this book, because this is why you have design quirks,
right?
This was, you can hold me to it in the comments. If there's another book that does this, prove me wrong. And I'm I'm thinking up to when, like, basically FAFSA went away, and maybe some of the Fan Pro books, but this was the only book to actually do that. You know, like, designs actually had these quirks, good or bad, to them.
They might not have, the only one that I know of that had an actual rule printed in the entry was a javelin. And that was because it was top heavy and it would have trouble in rough ground. Some of the rules, like the Quadmax, the Scorpion, and the Goliath, weren't officially really laid out, like the lateral shift. I think that was later. Yeah, you flip through these books and you read them and you just want to keep reading them over and over again because you want to see, you want to experience that universe and you want to suck it in. And whether it's the dropship entries, the Aerotech entries, any of that stuff. And then the layout changes. And it comes like 2750, I think, is the big change. You start to see it happen because I remember being really excited about 2750 when I first learned of its existence. And of course, it was printed before I was even aware of BattleTech. But, yo, you're seeing the Star League mechs. That's really cool. You know, I want to see the Star League mechs. And the art style was different. It was sort of based off of like the 1950s cars that we are aware of, the sort of smooth, sleek lines, the fins, that kind of stuff. But you begin losing things. You know, I think you lose the battle history. You lose the notable mechs and mech warriors. Like, that's gone.
Which, granted, in that book, they did mention, personal equipment
They
and
did.
stuff used in the era, which I believe they did that to.
Well, it was the first time we see that technology too, the Endosteel, the double heat sinks, the Gauss rifle. So there was all that in there as well, but you lost some of that fluff. And then comes 3050, which has like no fluff.
Nothing.
It's just mech designs, what they carry. It's just an overview. Even for the clans, really. It's just an overview.
Which
And the art
with
they
the
are
clans, I can understand, because from an in-universe perspective, they had no idea who they were fighting. But the Inner Sphere designs, it was meant more of an addition to 3025, which is why you got new art, and the variants, they made some weird decisions, like the infamous Marauder with the case in the wrong torso,
The Marauder too, I think. Yeah, the case in the wrong torso,
which
yeah.
you can get mad at that design choice all you want, but it shows the hysteria that they were going through trying to piece everything back together
Yeah,
to
yeah.
combat the clans.
I think one of the problems with TR-3050 is it suffers from the fact that a lot of the universe has had very gentle retcons in terms of when technology becomes available and when these designs started surfacing. And you start to see that when you go back to the War of 3039 historical, just when this technology becomes available, when it's in prototype form, when these redesigns were happening, when they actually became available. Because when you read the Warriors of Kerensky series by Stackpole, it makes it seem like they're using Succession Wars era battle mechs up to like 3051, like when there's the
When they're actually able to counter the clan threat.
There's sort of that pause when the what's her name, Miraborg, crashes her
Yeah,
aerospace
Terra
fighter.
Miraborg.
Yeah, she crashes it into the flagship and kills the Ilkhan,
Of Smoke Jaguar.
and then it just everything goes on pause for a year, and that's when the Inner Sphere catches up. And that makes sense from maybe a story perspective, but it doesn't really make sense from a universe perspective, like retooling all these designs and battle mechs. I think the artwork also suffers, and I think that's where maybe a lot of the miniatures started coming from was that 3050 artwork, which is a bit of a shame. I think like the Imp, for example, is particularly weak in terms of like a miniature and the artwork compared to the artwork for the Imp in the Wolf's Dragoon source book. And I think that Imp in the Wolf's Dragoon source book is it's fucking killer. It looks great. I like the proportions. I like the odd design choice. And you kind of lose it in the 3050 artwork. So if you guys get the chance, you can probably hop on sarna.net and look it up. And if you're listening to this on YouTube, this is the point when Dan will put up both images side by side so you can see.
Of course.
The Wolf's Dragoons one versus the 3050 TRO.
I'll put up a picture of an Ostrock too, just because I like them.
I think the Ostmechs are cool. Yeah, the comparison between the 3050 Ost, which actually became the miniature, which is what the stats are more closely based on, versus the 3025 Ost, which was then retconned to be the arms of the Ost War, and that's a whole other thing. But so you get the 3050 TRO, and you get very minimal fluff. Okay, I suppose fair enough. Like, how much information are you going to have on mech warriors for these mechs that are brand new? But you could probably put something in there from, you know, who fought the clans and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. Entry on Kai blowing up his hatchet man.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and again, they do go back with the 3050 upgrade, and they add this stuff in because they realized something was missing.
That was when Catalyst was just got the property, wasn't it? Or was it still Fan Pro?
No, I think it was Catalyst. They were going back and they were redoing a lot of those. And that is, actually, you know, they did, Brent Evans redid all the artwork for 3050.
Yeah, and I, to this day, I think that is the best, like, rendition of the Loose designs.
Yeah.
His artwork. I like his, the checkerboard came back.
Oh, and all the camo.
Heck yeah.
The paint schemes. Yeah, and then after 3050, you get 3055, which I think is probably, it has some really cool designs, the 3055 does. But in terms of presentation and layout, it's probably the weakest. I mean, you're cobbling together designs for the clans from the Jade Falcon sourcebook, the Wolf Clan sourcebook, and then you've got the stuff, the two Cs, from Victor Musical Industries that ended up getting unseen because of, not, I don't think real fears of lawsuit, but just wanting to cover their bases. That's a whole other topic. But
the book to me was more of a, well, we really screwed up with this whole clan balance thing. We need to put a lot of Gauss rifles out there for the Inner Sphere.
Right, which then goes really fucking crazy with 3058.
Yeah.
But I think right around 3060, 3058 and 3060 is, I think, when you're really getting
the drop off in designs, really.
Yeah, you're gonna sure that the concurrent release of TROs with the era in such a way that's very real time. And then FASA loses access to the Robotech designs because of the lawsuit. And they pull the Doug Ram and Crusher Joe stuff as well. And so you get 3025 revised, which then kind of combines downgraded Star League era mechs from 2750 to take that place. And what do you end up getting? Well, you get some new artwork with the 2750 mechs, which are kind of okay. But then you lose stuff still, right? Like,
They
take the pilots out. They put an icon for light, heavy, medium, and assault mechs for some unnecessary reason. But then you put that in there, you have to lose material because you don't have the space on the page anymore for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So then you lose some of the fiction and the fluff.
There's some holes in the fluff, too, because they make mention of the, you know, a lot of the unseen.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's still in there, but they take it out. And then the same thing happens with 3050, you know?
Which makes it more meh.
Which makes it even more meh. And then clearly there's this understanding that they're missing something. And when they start kind of going back, and this was in the past 5 years, you know, really looking at the TROs and what they want it to look like, what they want to do, they really change things up. You have a bunch of PDF-only products for, like, the Dark Age era stuff and, like, the TRO prototypes. And then you've got 3039, which combines 25 and 26 and 2750. And they start adding in notable pilots again.
3039, too, just you can kind of put me on the record for saying this, I think is probably one of the better TROs that they have put out.
Yeah.
In all honesty.
Oh,
because
yeah.
It was basically a reprinting of the old format.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Well, and the thing is that they felt so compelled to repeat the old format that they go back to it. Mm-hmm. And they even do that, I believe, with the latest TROs, I think the 3145.
Oh, yeah, Succession Wars and that, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's ironic because when they go to release the Succession Wars TRO, they have to pull all the designs out again.
Yeah.
You know, because of the next lawsuit that, thank God, they won.
Yeah. But with like the 3145 TROs, they kind of, I think they do bring back a lot of the same layout as 3025. So really, yeah. I mean, honestly, the 3025 hit a chord that none of the other ones did, that they had to go back and mimic. And not that mimicking is a bad thing. I mean, it's totally a great thing. I mean, it's what we want. But there's something about 3025 that really sucks you in.
It really, really says a lot about the design of the book and the aesthetic even behind it. Loose, like when I see the art that he did, it reminds me of those, I don't know what these books are called. They're like reference books that you could find in hobby stores when you're building like your Civil War army or like your World War II army, you know, making those displays. That's what this book basically is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's one of the reasons why I think I do like enjoy the artwork of 3058 so much, because they do bring Loose back. And some of the mechs don't look that great. I think
The Bushwhacker? Oh.
The Dragonfire is one that I'm not a big fan of either. But I think in general, a lot of those mechs, I think, I do enjoy, and he's careful to bring back the rounded edges and stuff like that from the 2750 with, say, for example, the Thunderhawk and the Spartan. Yeah. Oddly enough, the Striker, which has a terrible miniature. I will say, I think the miniature is bad, and I mean, that's, I don't remember who sculpted it, and I think he's done other work for Ral Partha and now Iron Wind, and they're all fine, but the Striker is pretty bad because it doesn't really match the artwork. And the Striker has been mentioned loads of times. I mean, I think going back to 3025, I think it's in there mentioned somewhere. And this was when Lords of the Battlefield was still an active web forum. One of the guys who had a gallery there had a homemade Striker battle mech, and he wanted to pitch it to Iron Wind, and Iron Wind said, "We'd love to do it, but the material you sculpted it from, we cannot use to make molds. So we can't use it."
Oh, man.
Because I feel like that Striker really matched the artwork on point. Like, even from an orthogonal standpoint, what I imagine it would look like head on. I think it looked bang on versus the Striker we have now. It's a shame. Because, yeah, that miniature's, it's not great. It's not great. Yeah.
Well, the majority of the 3025 miniatures are actually pretty good.
Right, right. And I know it's one of those things that some people have said that they don't agree with, but I feel like the 3025 miniatures, they were sculpted by like sort of the same group of people, the same like three or four or five sculptors, and they clearly all talked to each other, and they had a scale set up.
Like the same passion for the game, too.
Yeah, and they all... Well, a lot of them ended up going on to do like really big things. I mean, like, Julie Guthrie is a renowned miniature painter and sculptor. I mean, she's really talented. Huh. And she's done a lot of stuff, you know, in the recent past that people really like, especially in the fantasy side. And I think when Iron Wind did the Chaos Wars Kickstarter, I think she came back and did a sculpt for them to scale with the rest of the old miniatures, the old D&D miniatures that Ral Partha used to do.
Nice.
That they then repurposed for their Chaos Wars, you know, fantasy battles line. I mean, those miniatures, I mean, were all done, I think, really well. I mean, a lot of them are also single piece miniatures, which may explain to sort of their static appearance or their aged look. But at the same time, I mean, when you're new to this and it's all single piece, right? I mean, you gotta make it in a way that's gonna fit in a mold and not tear the mold apart when you press it and take it out. And it's, I mean, what do you, I mean, people complain. They go, I want more complicated things so I can pose it. And people say, well, I want single piece things so it's not such a pain in the ass to do stuff with and I can actually paint it without having to wrestle putting it together. You know, well, fuck do people want?
Yeah. Have you tried piecing together one of the new Marauders, the two clan or whatever?
Well, even the old Marauder. I put together a couple of them.
At this point, they would be old.
Well, and you know what? I mean, the worst miniature I've ever put together, and it's unsalvageable. It's a goddamn mess. For a while there, Ral Partha were putting out Lance packs, and they flirted with a blue resin material.
Oh boy!
And it casted well. It did cast well. The details were all there, and they were sharp and everything. Those motherfuckers were not glued together for anything.
That's why you need a pin vise, man.
And they broke. You looked at them funny, and they snapped. So yeah. I have an assault lance in that blue resin that is just a disaster from when I was a kid. Yeah. I mean,
I wish you guys could see the look on his face right now. Looks like his childhood was just
wounding.
Taken away from him.
It's goddamn wounding, man. That thing was a Battlemaster, two Warhammers, and a Marauder.
The original Marauder is a pain in the neck to put together, too, man.
Yeah.
I only have one of those. But yeah, like, the Marauder 2 Clan, the Project Phoenix one? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That thing was atrocious to put together. It looked okay, but... Ugh. But while we're on miniatures, in 3025, what were the sculpts that were lost? Wasn't the Enforcer one of them?
The Enforcer was one of them.
Yeah.
The Vindicator?
The Catapult? Which is a shame, because, like, the...
I like the original Vindicator more than the Resculpt. I mean, the Resculpt's good, but yeah. I prefer the older one.
The Catapult, that one's really... Now, I know you really like the bird legs on it.
Yeah, I do.
I'm more of the the beginner sculpt one.
The Mech Commander.
Where the lay? Yeah. Well, no, not the C4. I freaking hate that thing. The one with like the big egg looking torso.
Yeah.
The beginner blimp. Sculpt one that we got.
Well, that's the catapult, the old school catapult torso, right?
And yeah.
Modified legs.
And the modified legs.
Yeah.
But they're not the C4 legs. Like they're different. It's the one you got in the beginner's box when you first put it out. Yeah. That's the one I like.
Well, you know, I mean, it's tough, too, because it's one of those things I think people don't give much credit for. And, you know, when you sculpt something and then you make a master mold of it, and you have to account for shrinkage. And so when you make molds of some of these, if you make a mold off an existing miniature, you're going to get shrinkage as the material you put in the mold cools. And sometimes you have to deal with thermal expansion, which then maybe negates the shrinkage, but may ruin the mold. But a lot of these miniatures, you'll notice they're actually significantly smaller if they've been manipulated or changed around or modified, and then a casting made of that. That catapult torso was significantly smaller than the original. But you can tell it's the same one. Yeah.
I think that catapult that you like.
I think the Banshee was lost too, but maybe the Banshee was lost because when they put the sculpt out, it was both the Banshee featured in the TRO and then the Steiner variant.
Yeah, you got the Warhammer arm to put on
so
it.
So they had to.
I have that miniature.
Yeah, and then.
And it had the missile launcher was actually the same one on the Warhammer too.
Yeah. No, it was different.
Really?
Yeah, it's different. The Warhammer is boxier, and the Banshee one is curved.
Oh, man.
But, they had to
pull it. It was. I remember.
Yeah, they had to pull it because of the Warhammer arm, which may have been one of the reasons... I mean, it may have been one of the reasons why they pulled the Vindicator, because I think that arm looks very much like a Warhammer arm, too.
Yeah. Well, I don't have the first sculpt for the Vindicator, but...
Man, I have two on my way. I bought them off online, so I'll let you know. Yeah.
I'm jealous.
Yeah, guys, it's one of those things, like, when you get older, you don't care so much about factions that you play. You don't worry about it so much. So, you know, when I was younger, I was like, I'm not buying that mech. That's a Capellan Confederation mech, whatever. And now that I'm older, I'm like, well, the Capellans are kind of cool.
Yeah. You know how sad I was when I couldn't buy any of the Osmechs? I want to make a whole company of them. One Lance of Scouts, one Lance of Rocks, one Lance of Souls. It'd be freaking amazing. The Ostman cometh. Hey, easy to maintain. You know?
No armor on the arms.
No, but... who needs them?
Right.
There's nothing in there. He's shaking his head at me.
I mean, I like the Osts. I have more than enough Osts myself. I somehow at some point I've acquired, I think, a lance worth of each.
I would really, because I know you got to meet the two guys behind some of the designs. I really want to know why the old Ostrock has the arms like that. I really want to know. It's almost like there was a design that, not the Oswar, but something else they had in mind.
Yeah, and they came sometimes across it. I like to see what Luce said. I feel like he said somewhere. I think the idea was that the stats came first, and then the illustrations.
So there was an idea to have arms like that. There had to be.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it might have come from some other source, too. Because remember, I mean, I think the Osts debuted with City Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe they were thinking something else.
I'll have to look at my City Tech book, but I'm pretty sure that... Well, the art in the book is the same from, like, 3025.
Yeah.
Like, it is the fin arms on the rock. But I think the design itself is the one we're all familiar with.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, like, one of them, what was it, the book or the box set before that had the MK2 or something in it?
The Mark II, yeah.
Which had the two SRM2s.
Yeah, and it had, like, jump shots in the arms. It was very illegal, very illegal design.
I want one of those. I could do some sick flips on it. I should DFA from that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those were the days. The jumping tank. The Kanga.
Yeah, the Kanga. Yeah. Yeah. What I also liked about 3026, it had a lot of personal equipment in there, too, which is something I didn't repeat. And 3026, again, it's doesn't get the attention of 25, but what I like about it is that it's very clear that a lot of these designs were to exist in a world that had need for them that fit beyond a standard 1v1 tabletop game. And I think what sticks out are all like the remote sensor dispensers and pods and sensor equipment that were later kind of given use either in magazines or the Tactical Handbook or Maximum Tech or Tech Ops.
Oh, yeah, the weapons were used in Mech Warrior.
But it's one of those things where it's probably easier, again, to roleplay it. You've got your company of mechs, you got a lance of support vehicles, and then you've got your remote sensor dispensers and your... You know, covering your perimeter so that no one can just simply walk in to your base camp. I think what's also very cool is that they do describe it. I can't remember which entry it was, but again, it's about Kintaras, and it's about like that whole company of battle mechs that had, I think, bounties placed on their head. And they very clearly state it wasn't just the mech warriors. I mean, it was the whole support company. Because you don't think about it. You know, if you want to create a unit, you've got your mechs, and you have your mech warriors. What about all the support personnel? The dozens of people that keep this lance in operation? Don't think about it.
No, you really don't. You know, they're part of it, too. Yeah, they really lay out a lot in these books. Oh, yeah, how about the...
I like this pencil artwork here for the personal equipment in 3026.
Yeah, it's like reminiscent of like a World War II like recognition guide or something, you know?
And you can see, I mean, this stuff goes away with... This is not in TRO 3039. Granted, the alien reference.
Yep, the exoskeleton. Industrial exoskeleton on page, was it, 95? Yeah. In 3026, look that up.
Now, a lot of this stuff comes back in a time of war. So, you know, the rules for a time of war are a bit dense, but they go out of their way to make sure all this equipment is in some way in a time of war. You don't really have to go digging for it, which was great of the writers to do.
Yeah, they lay out sneak suits in here, too. You know, that's one thing they never did, too. Where the hell did submarines go?
Yeah, I can't remember which
Or
rule
like
book it is
boats?
in, but they have been some of the rule books, but yeah, I mean the use of boats and submarines for defense of a planet are it kind of feels like they're missing.
Yeah, we only got was it the Monitor naval vessel?
The Monitor, the Sea Skimmer, and the Neptune.
Yeah, there are only three total. I mean, I guess it just kind of shows
Well,
that.
there are more, and some of the new handbooks that have come out, like the for example, the Davian handbook. I think it has basically the equivalent of a warship in
Does
it.
it?
Yeah.
Wasn't the was it the support vehicle book? Which one was that one that was
Yeah,
put out?
the
That one got a
TRO,
lot of flack too.
the vehicle annex.
Yeah. That one, I remember that book got a lot of flack when it came out.
I
But I
wasn't aware of
understood why
that.
they did it.
Yeah. You want to have a realized universe that has these vehicles in it.
And a lot of these, and even the mechs, they were based on real world vehicles that were out there. I think the infamous one would be how the Timberwolf, the cockpit was based off of, what was it, the B-52 Stratofortress? Yeah. The Raven was actually based off of a fighter jet, the front of a fighter jet. I don't remember which one. Someone actually did post about it in the Facebook group, though.
Yeah, I
He
think I
got flack
see.
for that too.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I reassured him, like, a lot of the people, like you met two of them,
Yeah.
and we've already mentioned it a few times, but they were based off of real world things that were out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Military equipment. The Hetzer is a good example.
Right. It's an actual. What was it? I can't remember what the Hetzer was actually called. I mean, it was like a
Oh,
wheeled
it's
gun or
called a
something.
Hetzer. Yeah, it's like a
It's called a
wheeled
Hetzer, but
gun.
it's like the designation. It's not a tank because it doesn't have a turret. But it has basically a giant fucking cannon on the front of it,
Yeah, it's
you
just a
know.
big cannon with
And
wheels.
I think it's tracked. I think it is tracked. The World War II Hetzer was tracked.
What was that? But that's what a lot of people forget too,
But
because not.
what I love is the J. Edgar Light hover tank.
Yeah, talk about that real quick before we
And
lose it.
so one of the things about 3026 TRO is that they did some pages in color, and I think in mine it's gloss paper, and the one that Dan has right now it's just standard paper. And it was sort of a mix and match. The coloring I think on it is really cool on a lot of these, especially the J. Edgar. It's almost like, well, shouldn't you just done it all in color versus just some of it in color? And they did the same kind of cock up with the 3055 because some of them were in color and some of them weren't. But what I love about the J. Edgar Light hover tank, and I could not for the life of me figure this out. Why the hell would they name anything after J. Edgar Hoover? Is it because hover and Hoover are kind of. Is it like a play on words? And then I wish I remember who it was on the BattleTech forum, the main forum, said the greatest pun or the greatest reference was a J. Edgar Light hover tank was named that because it has a skirt. And J. Edgar Hoover was reputed to be a cross-dresser. And it's like, I get it. I get it. That is great.
You don't see that anymore, man. You just don't see it anymore. It's incredible. That was a good story when I heard it. I would have never known that.
It totally went over my head for 20 years, man.
Oh, man. A lot of these conventional units are actually really nice too. Well, when I say conventional units, I actually meant to say conventional fighters. The Mech Buster is actually my favorite. I love that thing.
Well, again, it kind of comes to this point too, is, if you're doing an RPG setting, one of the tricky things about BattleTech is that if it's mech v mech combat, whether it is a GM versus players or a player versus player, there's a parity there. And that can be tough. But that's what's so great about the vehicles is that no matter kind of what rule set you're using, although the newer rule sets maybe make them a little bit too durable.
Too complicated.
But what stands out about them is that they fulfill roles that you don't necessarily have to assign a mech for, unless you really want to. But when you guys are playing Dungeons and Dragons, you can have fairly weak or freshly created characters or maybe level one or maybe level five, and you can send them against the goblin
Goblin.
goblin horde
Hordes. The tequila's hitting.
The tequila's hitting. Goblin Horde or Skeletons. And, I mean, you play it against enough of them, it's definitely a challenge, but it's not insurmountable. Which I think is really powerful. You know, and then when you fight battle mechs, it's when you know, like, it's a real threat. Mm-hmm. And that's really great, is that you have resources to do kind of that sort of setting. And, you know, what's also great about Dungeons & Dragons and, say, Lord of the Rings, because that's going to be 20 years soon for those movies.
Oh.
You see ruins and destroyed temples and forts and all that stuff. There's a history and room to explore and investigate and maybe find artifacts. And the same thing with Battletech is that there's Starlink bases and artifacts that you can discover. And I think it's wise to try and emulate that for your game. And I think these TROs help you emulate that dramatically.
Yeah, to get back on vehicles too. A lot of these mechs in 3025 were labeled as support for infantry, like the Vulcan.
Yeah.
And the later rule sets really freaking neutered them, where it doesn't even make sense anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
The Urban mech is a good example. You know, because you would think an Urban mech would have a machine gun on it, but back then, if you were to fire an autocannon 10 at some infantry, it was bad.
Yeah.
It was really bad. You know, because he would do double damage in the open, and it would do, they'd be like 20 points of damage. You'd have, what, 4 infantry left for, yeah, like 8 or something like that?
Yeah.
Not like that anymore.
Well, there's definitely a sort of middle ground between super durable infantry and infantry that are super squishy. And I think because the rules originally had them to be so weak, or like even the vehicles. For example, there's that one time where we played, and you one hit my demolisher with the medium laser with fresh, yeah, armor, you know, and just, yeah, that was it. It was done. You know, didn't even penetrate the armor, but it was done. But yeah, it's pretty clear that there's a realized universe here for how these things work and what they're supposed to be used against. And, yeah, there is information here about its intended role and its sort of operating procedure. And a lot of the early fiction plays into that and changing doctrines. I think one of the great ones, again, kind of comes back to that, again, the Scorpion and that scenario that Robert Charette and Michael Todd over the Charette collection put information out of that we played. You know, the idea that the Scorpion was supposed to pair with vehicles and be a light mech/scout hunter.
Yeah.
Because it's under-armored, but it's so fast, and it has a big gun.
Well, some of them, too, are just, you know, lobbies to get a design out there. Which is pretty, yeah, much what the Assassin was.
Yeah.
It was a train wreck trying to get that thing out there.
Yeah.
You know? It's just, you know?
Well, the Charger.
Charger is another one, too.
The Charger was developed in a world with excessive money to burn. Which, boy, I mean, if that isn't a metaphor for, like, the modern-day F-22 Raptor.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's just, we got money to burn. Let's make a super heavy scout mech and just put the biggest engine in there. And of course, for the designers, it was like, hey, we should put this 400 rated engine on something. let's put it in this, you know?
I wonder how many people actually used it for its intended purpose as a scout mech. Even, I don't know, it's glorious when you pull off that full hex charge with that thing.
Well, it can beat the shit out of anything lighter than it. I mean, if it can get into physical punch range, I mean, that's it.
Hey, if you can run that thing into the front of an Atlas, dude, it can do some damage. Not with the small lasers, but just charging into that thing.
I mean, it'd be fun to use, I mean, or to come across. Again, like, your players are in a bunch of light mechs, and then up comes this elite pilot in a Charger.
Right? <And it's> like, mother of, yeah, God.
And I will say, though, that Charger that was put in the Fourth Succession War scenario book, not the original Fourth Succession War scenario book that came out kind of concurrently with the Atlases, that was published in the 80s, but I think it was published either in the late 90s or early 2000s. And it was supposed to be sort of a expansion to be used alongside the BattleTech 4th edition. That says a lot. That's a Freudian slip. The 4th edition box set. And it had sort of this Capellan variant of the Charger that dropped its engine rating from a 400 to, I think, a 320. And it had like an autocannon 20 on it and two SRM 6 packs. And yeah, it was a beast. It was pretty scary.
Later inspired a Hata Motochi.
Yeah. But that and Thug, right? You know?
Mm-hmm. Actually, since we're talking about the Hata Motochi real quick, there's a post about that on the Shuret collection too, about what it was supposed to have.
Yeah.
Supposed to be in a Thug ripoff.
Well, I also like the orthogonal images. Mm-hmm. And actually, that Michael Todd, also known as Sigil, so if you guys see him around various other media, that's who that is. So he just, I think he lives in Virginia, and this is what we should have freaking done. He just sent a bunch of emails to a bunch of old creators of BattleTech. Was like, hey, do you want to chat? And Robert Short was like, yeah, sure, let's chat. And then become like buddies. And so that's how Michael Todd, aka Sigil, is doing his thing. And he put up for sale on the Shrek Collection website those Hata Motochi orthos.
Oh man!
And I would have grabbed it. I mean, it wasn't cheap. This helicopter above us. It wasn't cheap. I mean, it was going for like $200, and someone just snatched that up. They said, "I want it."
That's awesome.
And it's good they got it because I would have bought it.
You'd have made that nice wooden frame for it.
Yeah. What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do?
Where are we at right now in time? We've been rambling for a while.
We have been.
3025 will do that.
We have been talking for an hour and 2 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, can you believe that?
See, in retrospect, 3025 is a big deal, that book.
Yeah.
It established a lot behind BattleTech, much like another one we probably cover sooner or later, the Star League book. The original that came out.
Well, and I get it. I guess I don't get it, but the sort of complaints of, oh, I don't want to get that. It has all of the old artwork in it. It's stupid. And it's like, what are you talking about? Like, it has all the fluff in it. What does it mean if it has all the artwork? It's from the 80s. What do you want?
Yeah.
It's not enough of a reason to not get it. Or not spend time with it or not read it, especially when you can get it relatively cheap. You can get the 3039, you know, version that's pretty inexpensive and has a lot of designs in it. That to me feels silly to not. I guess it's kind of, there's two kinds of people. The people who want to be in this game because of the fluff in the background that you want to delve into it, and the people who just want to play the board game. And, you know, I get it, but, you know, what makes BattleTech so strong is the background. You know, it's what makes Lord of the Rings so strong. Because even throughout The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings trilogy, they throw these names out there all the time that don't get expounded upon until the Silmarillion comes out. Now, granted, I like the Lord of the Rings, I like The Hobbit. The Silmarillion's a pretty dry read. It took me 3 times to finally finish that book. It is pretty dry.
Yeah, I never read it.
But it's that depth. You want to keep going. You want to keep looking. And to this day, I want to know what happened to those two blue wizards. We'll never find out what happened to those two blue wizards. It never happened.
They went on to found Wizards of the Coast. And now we have Magic the Gathering. Yeah. And the BattleTech card game that ran for a little bit. Not that long.
So yeah, but that's BattleTech. That's what TRO 325 and 326. You want to keep going. You want to keep reading. You want to experience this universe. You want to see what's going on. You want to lament your favorite designs whose factories were destroyed. You want to know about them.
You want designs that weren't necessarily made to work.
Well, we want them now. When we were kids, we didn't want them. I remember spending a whole summer redesigning, optimizing battle mechs, you know, as a kid. And I remember doing that, you know. But now that I'm 35, it's like, well, I want the machine guns.
It's like when you're playing StarCraft, you're like, ah, you know what, I feel like rushing someone with Zerglings. Why not? It's not the best thing to do, but hey, I'm crazy.
Well, if it works, you're a genius.
Yeah. It's only worked once for me, and I'm not saying I'm a genius, because I'm definitely not.
So yeah, guys, that's our rambling on that sort of golden era of TROs.
We'll hopefully see a resurgence. I didn't purchase the new Succession Wars book only because they took out the Unseen or Classics. They took them out again. I'm waiting for them to revamp it before I buy it. But, I mean, the fluff in there is almost identical, if not identical, to what we have in the original book, which says a lot about the original.
I think a lot of things did change. I mean, 3039, a lot of things did change. So TRO Succession War is basically reprinting the material from 3039 and a couple other things. But in 3039, like, particularly the information, so the Archer changed. You know, they included, you know, Morgan Cowell and Jamie Wolfe in it, you know, versus not having it. And they included Hans Davian in the Battlemaster, and I think they included Grayson Carlisle in the Marauder. So some things did change. And 3039 is still a really good product, and it's worth getting, because they go back to doing those things. And when they did the 3050 and 3055 upgrade, they included a lot of that information. They started putting in notable pilots, and the layout matched what was going on here. So while the 3050 upgrade has a new artwork and doesn't have the Unseen, it has that sort of layout, and it does describe what happened during the clan invasion and those battle mechs being used even up to the Jihad era. I can't remember about 3058 upgrade. I do know that they added in all the battle armor that had been discussed and released either in the various sources like the field manuals and other things. They did put that in 3058. I don't remember if they did notable pilots. I can't remember if they did.
For battle armor? I'm not sure, actually.
No, I take that back. I think they did.
Did they?
I think they did. I don't know if they did it for the battle mechs. Because I remember looking a lot of stuff up for a couple things. But then with the 3145 TRO, the 3150 TRO, I think they did put a bunch of stuff in there for about like notable pilots and stuff. I think I do remember seeing that. But it's clear that when they went back to revamp those TROs, they borrowed heavily from the layout of 25 and 26.
They realized how strong it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what... Hey, these books, that's what got a lot of people into the game.
Right. Right.
It was... This is probably, I would say, one of the turning points for BattleTech. Mm. What made it become as popular as it is today. Yeah. Well, popular in quotations.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it definitely did. Was a game that garnered a lot of attention and had a lot of success with video games. Mm-hmm. You can't say about Warhammer. I don't think there's really that many good Warhammer games.
Oh, they change everything. Yeah. Anyway, I played Dawn of War before, but it's all right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you spent a lot of time playing MechWarrior 2, MechWarrior 3.
Yeah.
A little bit of MechWarrior 4.
The fluff from 3025, 3050 were in the manuals for the games.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially, I really dig the artwork, the cover artwork for both 25 and 26. So, like, that Marauder being a blueprint, a skeleton with some of the armor plates missing so you can see the Myomer bundles, and then the realized finished product, and then with 26, the mirrored image of the Striker tank up top in camo, and then you flip it, the mirror image below the ground as if it's standing on, if it's resting on glass, being like a blueprint layout.
Mm-hmm.
That's good stuff.
It's real clever.
It's good stuff.
Those were the days.
And also, like, how this was all written by Comstar, so they're able to sort of you know, hand wave away the errors, as it being like Comstar misinformation when there were mistakes. And this is also before all the information sort of really trickling out about how fucked up and awful Comstar is, which you really began seeing with the end of the third Grey Death Legion trilogy. That all played out in that third book. So I'm not going to spoil too much, but if you guys haven't read those books, those are good adventure books, especially that third one. Yeah. But cool, cool. So I think we're going to leave it there, guys. I hope all of you are doing well. If you are still following us and paying attention, if you're reading this on YouTube or watching this on YouTube, you know, feel free to drop a comment. You know, what's one mech or vehicle, or heck, even one of the drop ships, that really sucked you into the universe when you first flipped it open and read those entries? I mean, 25 was the one that blew my head open. It really was. So we want to hear from you. What is it that what book or entry was it that you read that got its hooks in you and hasn't let go?
We also have a podcast on Anchor now, which I've updated the front of our YouTube page, so you can go to it. It's anchor.com/the memory core, I believe. If not, I could put a link in the description. No big deal. It looks like iTunes actually accepted it. I don't think any of the other ones did, because you could send like a mass like login thing for it. So we could be on multiple platforms, but I think iTunes is the only one it actually accepted. But if not, hey, you can get us off Anchor now.
Making it big.
Yeah, if you want to call it that.
Well, hey, this is Adam.
And I am Dan.
We are signing off. You guys stay safe out there. Wash your hands. Social distance, pandemic, and all that good jazz.
Don't die. It's not polite.
Hey, be good. And before you know it, we'll all be back to licking door handles again like we used to.
I mean, I didn't. Should I?
Depends on how much flavor there is.
Nah.